Great, thank you. Appreciate everybody being here this afternoon. My presentation is called Research, Advocacy, and Policy for Healthcare Transition. And I'd like to acknowledge my colleague, David Wood, from the University of Florida, who couldn't be here, as well as the many agencies that have been involved with and support this initiative, the Florida Developmental Disabilities Council, the Florida Department of Health, our Title V agency, Children's Medical Services, and that's just a few of them. It's really been a collaborative process. And I have nothing to disclose. I'm going to talk today about the process and the approach that Florida has taken as a state to start addressing the issue of healthcare transition. If any of you were in the earlier 10:30 session, you heard a little bit about healthcare transition, and there seemed to be quite a bit of interest in that. But what I'm going to do today is give you some background and research about healthcare transition. Then I'm going to try to focus on the process that we've used to engage a broad range of advocates, consumers, and providers. And then look at the way that we are using policy and legislation to affect change. So what is healthcare transition? The term was actually introduced about 20 years ago by Dr. Robert Bloom and his colleagues. And he said that healthcare transition is the purposeful planned movement of adolescents and young adults with chronic physical and medical conditions from child-centered care to an adult-oriented care system. And I would just add that healthcare transition encompasses more than just transfer of care from a pediatrician to an adult provider. It involves all of those skills and supports that one needs to be able to access and then navigate the adult healthcare system. Why are we even talking about this? Why is healthcare transition even a point of discussion? And I guess the short answer would be the amazing survival rate increases among children with special health care needs in the last 30 to 50 years. So much so that many conditions and diseases that were once typically thought of as being childhood conditions, such as cerebral palsy, congenital heart disease, sickle cell, cystic fibrosis, those diseases now have as many or more adults as there are children. And so we have this whole new population that is needing to transition to adult health care. So today, about 16 to 18% of youth have a special health care need. And out of those, 4 to 5% have a physical health condition or a developmental disability, and 4 to 5% have serious mental illness. And as you all probably know, the outcomes for this population are less than encouraging. They're less likely to finish high school, find a job, live independently. They're more likely to live in poverty. And importantly, without ongoing age-appropriate health care, they're at higher risk for developing secondary disabling conditions and adverse increased hospitalizations. Well, the good news is that over the last probably about 10 years, there have been several events that have helped create awareness and really start addressing these issues. One is that the Maternal and Child Health Bureau has added a healthcare transition objective to its six core performance measures. So you see here number six is that youth with special healthcare needs will receive the services necessary to make transitions to all aspects of adult life, including healthcare, work, and independence. And that means that all state Title V agencies have to report on their progress towards this goal. In addition, several of the medical associations jointly developed a policy statement, a consensus statement, about what physicians need to do to facilitate healthcare transition. And you can see here they need to identify a primary care provider, they need to be knowledgeable, they need to have a medical summary for the patient, conduct screening, and ensure insurance coverage. So how are we doing? There's really only one population-based survey that measures healthcare transition, and that's the National Survey of Children with Special Healthcare Needs. It is conducted every 5 years. It's a telephone survey among parents of children with special health care needs, and it reports data both at the national and state levels. And so you can see here with the outcome number 6, children ages 12 to 14 who receive the services they need for healthcare transition, that nationally the yellow-orange, 41.2% achieved that outcome, and in Florida, 33.8% achieved that outcome, which is a bit discouraging. And actually in Florida, if we were to look at the rural areas, only 16% achieved that outcome. Well, so what are the barriers? Why is this so problematic? The list is pretty extensive, but one of the major issues is that there is a huge difference between the culture and the organization of services between pediatric and adult healthcare providers. If you go to a pediatrician, you're going to find a very family-centered, nurturing environment with a developmental focus. Yet when you go to the adult provider, that physician is going to have expectations of having a one-on-one conversation with the patient, may not involve the family in the conversation. There's an expectation that the patient will understand what's going on and adhere to treatment. And particularly for adults with complex health conditions, there is less support staff to help coordinate all those services. So it's a real culture shock for many as they make that movement. Another big issue is the training among adult providers. Medical schools don't typically train adult physicians about disabilities or about childhood onset conditions, so they're less knowledgeable and hence less comfortable. And you can see the results here from a survey in New Hampshire, with the purple being the most comfortable and yellow being not comfortable. Starting at the top, they're very comfortable with healthy young adults and some conditions like asthma and hypertension, but then you get down to the bottom with some childhood onset conditions like cystic fibrosis and autism, they're much less comfortable. And then finally, inadequate health insurance. The 18 to 29-year-olds as an age group are the largest uninsured population in the U.S. Is that okay? And this is a time where young people are aging out of their childhood service plans for people with disabilities. There's the change in SSI eligibility requirements and access to Medicaid. Benefits are limited, cost barriers. And for the population of young adults in general, certainly uninsurance is a big issue. But for young adults with disabilities, really underinsurance is as big or a bigger issue. And that's being able to have benefits that cover all of their healthcare needs, including vision and dental. So there are a lot of challenges, obviously. Excuse me just a second. But we're very fortunate in Florida to have a lot of strong advocates and, in fact, have some national healthcare transition experts. I'm not sure whether I'm doing something here.
It's fine. It's not you.
Okay. So there's been a lot of work done over the past few years, kind of on an individual basis and certainly in research, but it wasn't until 2008 that we really collectively as a state came together and started looking at the issue of healthcare transition systematically and in a coordinated way. What happened in 2008, a group of advocates introduced a bill to conduct a statewide needs assessment on healthcare transition. And with the help of a champion, a Florida senator named Stephen Wise, that bill was passed. So the bill mandated that a task force be assembled, and that task force needed to obtain input from stakeholders, including youth and young adults. And there was 6 months for this task force to develop a state plan for healthcare transition. And these are just some of the elements that were included in the language of the bill. The Title V program would provide leadership. They chaired the task force. We would, or the task force would assess and document need. They'd identify strategies and best practices, present a range of models that communities could look at, models that could accommodate geographic and cultural diversity, that could be adaptable to local needs, and that, and this is really important, that it be integrated with other agencies and other systems like education, vocation, and independent living. And then finally, the mandate was to identify existing and potential funding sources. However, there was no legislative budget allocation. So, you know, that was a problem. I mean, this was a great opportunity, but it was a big job. We had very little time to do it, and we had no money. So what do we do? Well, the Florida Developmental Disabilities Council really stepped up to the plate, and they supported the initiative with a grant. And what that allowed was for the task force to hire a project facilitator. And I can't emphasize how important that piece of it was. I mean, it was to have a dedicated person that coordinated all this in a short period of time was really essential. The task force itself was comprised of 14 legislative appointees, and these were from various agencies in the state. There was a mandated representative from the Department of Education, from the Agency for Persons with Disabilities, from Voc Rehab, from our Department of Children and Families. And then we also recruited 21 additional stakeholders, many of them consumers, so that we had a 35-member work group. So we ended up having two face-to-face meetings over these 4 months. Now, the 6 months has now gotten down to 4 months. And the project facilitator used technology in a big way to try to facilitate this. So we created a project website where we could share information and post documents, created an email distribution list, and developed a teleconference venue. And right off the bat, in the very first meeting, we identified and organized three subcommittees. And those, the subcommittees really were the core of this effort. They're the ones that did the work. And so those subcommittees were financing, services and models of care, and then education and training. And in that 3 to 4 month time period, we had about 13 teleconferences, which was 4 to 5 teleconferences per subcommittee. And concurrently, during that time, we compiled some personal stories from young adults, families, and providers, and included that in the final report, and we were able to submit that to the governor and the legislature at the end of the year. So this is a copy of the report, and I actually have a couple of copies here if anybody is interested in looking. It's also posted on our website, as is the language that we use for the bill. This report is about a 35-page document, and it outlines 16 strategies to improve healthcare transition. And the next step was to take those strategies and format it into a healthcare transition plan with goals and objectives and activities. And I know that this is very hard to read, but I just wanted to point out that we have this kind of one-page visual that shows, you know, what the mission and vision of this group was. And then we go down and you can see it's really the same subcommittees: healthcare financing, education and training, services and models of care, and then infrastructure. And we list all of the objectives and activities under each of those. Some of the challenges with this process was, first and foremost, we just had a very short period of time to do it. Another challenge was getting youth and young adults involved. Again, this was a very time-intensive, work-intensive process, and there were a lot of scheduling conflicts, not just with young adults and youth, but with just the larger group in general. You've got 35 professionals that you're trying to schedule a meeting with. It's very difficult. And then it would have been nice if we had had more opportunity to develop relationships and do some more face-to-face networking. So where are we at now, and how are we using policy and legislation to drive the implementation of the plan? Well, financing and financial support is still an issue, and I think it's going to be in this climate. But we do get some financial support from CMS and FDDC, the Florida Disabilities Council. We have established a State Office of Healthcare Transition within CMS. We call it Florida HATS, Florida Health and Transition Services. One of our big focus areas has been to facilitate the development of community-based coalitions, really understanding that, you know, healthcare happens at the local level. So we need to have the communities themselves make those linkages between the pediatric and the adult community, as well as engaging local agencies and school districts. So we did this pilot in three regions in Florida. We really used a public health planning approach. We actually adapted the MAP approach, which you might be familiar with, that for healthcare transition, and provided a guide for these coalitions to use. And over about 6 months last year, each of them developed their own plans to address their own local needs in creating these systems. We've also developed some web-based online training for healthcare professionals. It's a 4-hour module, and we provide free CMEs and CEUs. We've created a healthcare insurance guide for young adults 18 to 30 that provides all of the range of options for young adults in the state of Florida. We have an online toolbox and a local service directory, and we've begun evaluation of the materials and all of these activities. The final piece is that, understanding that this is a work in progress, we're currently working on two activities that will hopefully directly impact policy and legislation. And one is that we're collaborating with the Florida Pediatric Society to develop clinical care guidelines, condition-specific clinical care guidelines. And what that's going to involve is doing a literature review and looking at establishing some evaluation standards. But we hope to have a set of recommendations for the whole state of Florida for the physicians to use going forward. And then the final piece is that we're doing a follow-up piece of legislative proposal in 2011, this session, and we're really looking at this being complementary to that first piece of legislation. It's going to formalize the plan. Another important piece of it is that we are asking for our Title V agency to be able to serve clients up to age 26 rather than 21, because that would provide the link into adulthood that's really needed. I mean, at this point, they're not authorized to even do any follow-up. We will have to engage a legislative champion. We have a new governor and a good new legislature, so that might be a challenge. We'll have our Department of Health review it, and hopefully they'll have it considered as a legislative priority. And we'll find some bill sponsors. And then finally, we really want to involve youth and families in this process. We're going to use our Facebook, social media venues to help communicate personal stories and get them involved with the legislative process. So that's where we're at today. Wish us luck on the legislation. This is the contact information. And all of these materials are posted on our website. Thank you.